Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, a lot of draft talk as we commence draft week. We are finally here. We have argued. We have debated.
So it's got a little different feel to it for a number of reasons.
The draft or what? Or the week?
Yes, both.
Like for the Bears are you talking about or for the league?
No, I think for the Bears, yeah.
Oh, this is, yeah, it's game changing.
Yes.
This is going to be one that we'll look back on and we will say, this is one of the great ones, or this is one of the great banana in the tailpipes.
I think you could call this an inflection point for this organization.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it will be one of those that we will say, again, another one that they swung and missed and we all fell for, or this will be one of those that we say, finally, this was finally the one.
And, oh, by the way, during draft week, they're going to hold a press conference to announce their plans and show you their plans for a new stadium on the lakefront. Busy week for our Chicago Bears.
And then it's one thing to show the renderings and tell us, but then the approval has to happen.
Yes, I still want somebody to draw me pictures and speak slowly when they describe how you are going to invest $2 billion into a stadium that the public's going to own. Let's
ask Robert Mays this question. As one of our favorite guys to talk to from The Athletic, he does a great football podcast. We've talked to him a couple of different times here leading up to this draft week. All right, Mays, they're sort of comparable as we bring him in on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Whether you're the day before the draft unveiling shiny renderings of a football stadium or you're handing a jersey to the number one overall pick, what are you more optimistic about executing correctly, the quarterback or the stadium plans?
I've never seen them screw up a stadium plan. Well, maybe that's not true.
Well, we did here. Yeah. We screwed it up here, Mays.
Screw up fewer stadium plans. So I'm going to go with more optimism for the stadium.
Wow.
That's not to say anything about Caleb Williams. Actually, I'm fairly optimistic about that. But I've just got a lot of scar tissue that's currently lingering. I think you guys can understand that.
I'm a little taken aback. I'm not going
to
lie.
I did not expect him to answer this. I thought for sure he was going to say Caleb.
I mean, they turned Old Soldier Field into a space shuttle. Then they spent $179 million to purchase land in Arlington Heights and then said, nope, we're going downtown. And then they talked about putting the road under the ground, and my head just exploded. I thought you were going to say Caleb Williams is going to be the best Bears quarterback we've ever seen and going to throw for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdown passes.
I actually do think that's probably going to happen. I do think he's going to be the best quarterback that we've ever seen. Whew. But I think it's hard to ignore everything that's happened to me over the 36 years that I've been on this planet.
Yeah, I was surprised. I should poll that question. See what I bet you Bears fans will say the quarterback.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Maybe they go with Mace.
I am interested to know what your expectations are, Robert, about the rookie campaign of Caleb Williams in a system that has been, you know, dolled up pretty nicely for him. I don't know that a first overall pick has found himself in a better infrastructure in his rookie season than the one Caleb will find himself in.
Oh, I think that they've set him up for success just about as well as you could hope. And obviously we'll see what happens at nine, but if you look at all the rookie quarterback seasons we've had recently, you know, guys that have been capable starters from day one, I wouldn't be surprised if he did something like that. You know, maybe a diet version of the Justin Herbert rookie year that we saw, what we saw from CJ Stroud last year. Just one of those seasons where you come away being like, yep, he's good enough. He clears the bar. I think that would be a success, and I think that they have absolutely set him up for something like that.
As we've gone down this road, Robert, is there any concerns that you had, whether it was before you watched all the tape, before you saw some of the interviews, have all your questions been answered about Caleb Williams, or is that impossible until you actually see him play in a Bears uniform?
Oh, I think that's impossible. I think there absolutely are still questions. And my biggest question is just how does he see things and how adept is he going to be at playing on time and within structure? If you watch him play, I mean, there are so many moments where he'll just turn stuff down, you know, within the structure of the play. And often he's right. He'll be looking for a bigger play. He'll understand what the limitations of that choice are. There's one play against Oregon that really sticks out to me where the third down, like third and eight, Oregon brings a blitz off the nickel. He sees the nickel blitzing. He chooses not to throw hot to that guy, in part because I think he knows he's short of the sticks anyway. So he extends the play and then ends up throwing the ball to the original hot receiver coming all the way across the field, and it's like a 15-yard gain for a first down. And you see that kind of stuff. And I think the biggest question with him is, did he choose to operate outside of the structure of the offense because he had concerns about the supporting cast, concerns about the structure of the offense, or did he choose to operate outside of that structure because he doesn't know how to live within it? And until we see how he plays with better players around him, with a more defined offensive system around him, I think it's impossible to answer that question.
Robert, did you see a definitive difference between how he played the quarterback position in 2022 versus 2023?
I think so. I think he was more willing to hold on to the ball in 2023. I think that there was just less separation, period. I mean, the difference in that offense with Jordan Addison and without Jordan Addison, I think, was pretty pronounced. And you can go back to that Oregon game as a really good example. Oregon played a lot of press man coverage against them in that game because they just didn't trust that anybody could create separation and get open among any of those receivers. And that is one thing that he'll, a lot of these guys, you know, Jay Daniels being a really good example, he's going to get a worse situation. Caleb Williams absolutely is going to be in a better situation in the NFL than he was during his final year at USC. And I think that's what's so encouraging about this.
Okay, so they've already put a pretty good group together to help with his development. What else do you expect them to do at nine that possibly could help him, or maybe they're looking in a different direction?
If one of those receivers is there at nine, I would support drafting one of the receivers at nine. Because Keenan Allen is 32, he's not under contract for next year, and you're only going to be an 11 personnel 65% of the time. You know, you play with three receivers. They really don't have a functional third receiver right now. Tyler Scott was fine as a rookie, but nothing that you saw from him should preclude you from taking an Adunze or a Neighbors if they're available to you. So I think both in terms of the short term and the long term, if one of those guys is there, I would have no issue with drafting him.
Or do you prefer one over the other, Adunze over Neighbors?
I just like Adunze because I just like how clean he is. I like how many different things he can do. He's just such a solid prospect. Yeah. I understand why people have painted Neighbors as more of a high upside type of proposition just because of what he can do with the ball in his hands, how explosive he is. But with the other two guys that they have, I just love the stylistic fit that Adunze gives you. DJ Moore, Rome Adunze, and Keenan Allen is... That is a lights-out group of receivers. But if it's Malik Neighbors or if they think, hey, we can make a play for Marvin Harrison because the draft fell a certain way, either of these three guys, I think that you'd be happy with the results.
When you mentioned Harrison, do you have, like, is there any scenario where you would be in favor of trading up for him?
The only reason I would be in favor of trading up for him is I wouldn't characterize it as trading up for him. I would characterize it as you're trading up because you don't think any of the three are going to be there at nine. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. You know, if two of them go earlier, if there's a team that thinks they want to get to eight and jump the Bears for the third one. So if you think that you have to maneuver a little bit in the top 10 in order to get one of the three receivers and maybe use that 2025 second that you have from Carolina and some of that ammunition, I could understand that thought process. Going back to the combine, there are people who are draft experts and look at this all the time that thought that was going to be necessary, that they would have to move up to get one of these three guys. And with all the quarterbacks potentially going in the top five, that calculus has changed a little bit. But if that's where they sit, even after all of the dust settles, we have to do something or one of these three guys isn't going to be there at nine. I don't have an issue with that.
So so giving up one of the second round picks is not too much to end up with one of the three wide receivers.
I could see it both ways. You've spent a lot of draft capital recently on veterans. You traded away a second for Montez Sweat. You traded away a fourth for Keenan Allen. You don't have a ton of cost control talent that you're going to be adding to the roster this year because one of the picks is going to be for a quarterback who's going to be the number one pick who's sort of expensive. So So you could look at the way that they've spent draft capital over the last 2 years and say, I would like a few more cheap dice rolls as we've spent on some expensive veterans. But I also think that you only have so many shots to add difference-making players at that position, and you want to put your quarterback in the best position to succeed as early as you can. So I understand each argument, but I don't think I'd have a strong issue either way.
If the draft goes the following route, Robert, like there's a run on quarterbacks, they're drafted 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, then the Bears are basically picking 5th in this draft with, you know, regard to the other players. If the 3 receivers are gone and Joe Alt is gone, do you believe the Bears will stay there and draft a pass rusher, or do you believe that they would take that opportunity to maybe move back and increase what they have in terms of collateral or draft currency?
It's a great question, and I think it's about how they see the pass rushers. And from what I understand, there are teams who see them clustered. You know, it's a preference sort of thing. Dallas Turner's 21. He's 2 years younger than the other two guys who are, I think, have been described as first-round picks, Jared Verse and Latu from UCLA. So if you think the guy who is an athletic freak, who is only 21 years old and does have pass rush production, you know, there's some of these guys who come into the draft. I think that Trayvon Walker being the best example, when he went number one, he had almost no pass rush production in college. Dallas Turner still has a ways to go in terms of nuance and refinement, but this is a guy who still was one of the most productive pass rushers in college football last year. The difference is Latu was probably the most productive pass rusher. So it's about the flavor that you want, what type of player. There are pluses and minuses to all of them. So let's say you like all 3. You're comfortable, let's say, if you go from 9 to, I don't know, 13, right? Because the Raiders want to come up and make sure that they get the top corner in the draft, just as a hypothetical. If you like all 3 of them, I think you feel safe doing that. But if you have them tiered a specific way, where you have one guy that's clearly ahead of the others, I would have no issue with sticking in the top 10 and picking one.
Robert Mays joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Catch Mays' football show. It's called The Athletic Football Show. And he joins us right now on ESPN 1000. The offensive tackle position is debated a lot with a lot of Bears fans, because I know a lot of fans would like them to draft a left tackle with that first round pick, or if they do trade down to grab the left tackle there. Others say Braxton Jones is good enough. How do you grade him, and how do you think they feel about him?
It's a great question. I think that he probably does clear that bar of good enough. I was talking to another GM about this last week, just about their needs and how they might fill it. And he said, don't think about it as to whether Braxton Jones is good enough. Think about whether they'd be willing to pay him $20 million a year next offseason. That's more of the question, is that right now you can absolutely live with him, but is he somebody you're going to want to commit to 2 years from now? Or do you want to use this chance to upgrade and get in front of that a little bit? I thought that was interesting. But as I look at their needs, I think that left tackle is a little bit further down the list. If you're going to draft a left tackle at that spot, I think you've made a declaration about how you want to build the roster and where you want strength of the roster to be. That feels out of character compared to what they've done recently. You know, the fact that they were even willing to roll with Braxton Jones as a rookie, I think, lets me know we want to just make sure that we have enough pieces up front to get by on the offensive line. We don't necessarily need to spend high-end draft capital. I think Darnell Wright was the best player and best option available to them at that spot last year. So we'll see what happens. But I'm of the opinion, I'm in the camp, that I think he's good enough for you to continue rolling with what you have.
This draft has the capacity to be pretty sexy, pretty interesting to see how things unfold. What do you expect to happen early on? Do you expect there to be a run of quarterbacks 1 through 4?
I do. Yeah, I think there are enough teams that need the fourth quarterback. And I think that Arizona specifically has shown a willingness to move around the board. If this was a team that had a history of sticking and picking, that didn't really, wasn't creative in the way that they saw the draft, maybe I would think differently. But what we saw from Arizona last year, where they were willing to move out of the top 10 for their guy, I think Monty Austin Ford is creative in how he sees this. And I think that it's all about the market. It's all about which teams are motivated to make something happen, and Minnesota absolutely is. I mean, Minnesota needs to come away from this draft with a quarterback, and I think a team like the Broncos is. They don't have as much draft capital as Minnesota does, but I think they do have an urgency to come away with a quarterback. And if it's two teams that can create that bidding war, then I think that it leaves a team like Arizona more willing to move off of it because they're going to get the right price for that pick.
Is J.J. McCarthy the hardest evaluation of any player in this draft for you?
It's a good question. I think he's probably in that conversation, but there are a lot of guys that I think are difficult. You know, Marius Mims started 8 games for Georgia last year, and he is somebody that's probably going to go in the first round. So I think that makes it tough. Quinyon Mitchell was a MAC player. He did well at the Senior Bowl, but when you're comparing him to other MAC players, it can be a little bit difficult to slot those guys and figure out exactly where they should go. But I think J.J. McCarthy is probably in that camp just because you got to watch a lot of games in order to get the right sample size for what he is as a passer.
Which of these quarterbacks do you think has the biggest bust potential in him? And that's not just the player, but where he finds himself drafted as well.
That's a good question.
Very breathy there. That was a big breath by you.
Well, I'm trying to. So it's not. I wouldn't stack them this way. If I had the second overall pick in this draft, I would pick Drake May, just because I have a higher upside like Jaden Daniels does. And sometimes when we're talking about quarterbacks, I think that we can miscast what upside and ceiling looks like. Justin Fields is a very good example of this. People look at somebody with physical tools and think that they have a high upside. But if you look at the quarterbacks around the NFL who truly do have really high upside, it's about creativity and potential as a passer from the pocket. What sort of physical gifts do you have to navigate the pocket, change arm slots, throw off platform, throw a little bit on the move? And I think that Jaden Daniels, even though he's a great athlete, you didn't see a lot of that in college. He was not a creative player. If he was pressured or he had to move off his spot, he ran almost every single time. There are very few examples of him moving off of his spot and being a creative thrower. He's a great athlete, but there isn't a lot of creative flourish to his game. I feel the opposite about Drake May. You saw a lot of that with Drake May, of him navigating the pocket, making throws off balance, making throws off platform. He is a really creative player. So I think he's the bet that I would make, but I also think you could make an argument that Jaden Daniels, because of the rushing and because of the accuracy and some of the decision-making, is actually a safer pick than somebody like Drake May would be.
It's great stuff, Mays. We always appreciate you. Enjoy the draft, and we will catch up, okay?
Thanks, Robert.
Sounds good, guys. Talk to you soon.
See ya. There's Robert Mays, The Athletic, and check out The Athletic's football show. We've never played this. Is this worth giving a spin? I never heard the Shea cap argument over Marvin Harrison Jr. Meller, is it worth playing?
Well, yes. I thought it was entertaining. I know Waddle enjoyed it.
Did you hear it? It was a I thought it was like it was something that grew and grew, and it came to a kind of a solid boil.
Since we were talking about
time.
It,
yeah, it
this was from
time.
A few days ago, right?
Yeah, I think Cap was all in. I'm all in. I'll give everything, my car, my house, everything to move up for Marvin Harrison. And Shea was like, he wasn't buying it.
So, I'm kind of in the camp of Mays, where if they trade up for Marvin Harrison, I will be excited. Like, and if they don't, I'm not going to be pounding the table. I understand why you won't want to trade up for them. But I'm not going to rage like some people if they want to chase him and get a player like that on their roster.
Yeah, rage would be, for me, would be the wrong emotion, because you're going to add a fabulous player. The cost may be, you know, up there and not something you would want to spend, all things considered. But rage is not I would never rage against that either.
Because I believe in the talent. Because I don't think in a couple of years when you have Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr., are you going to miss those picks if you're that good? I don't think if you're as good as you think you're going to be, those back of the round picks are going to necessarily be as important as you as they once were.
It's
you
fair.
Know what I mean?
Yeah, my resistance would be, look, at this point, I don't think the drop-off is significant enough from Harrison Jr. to Odunze to be given up next year's first-round pick, because like Odunze.
And that's why
there's no guarantee.
Well, like May said, if you want to go up a couple of spots to secure one of the three, that's something that he would think about. So this was Cap and Shea arguing about trading up for Marvin Harrison Jr.
Shea, how would you feel if they gave up 9 and next year's number 1 and they got Marvin Harrison?
I don't want to do that at all. at all.
And if Paul said to you, my evaluations, he's the best receiver I've evaluated in a decade, and that guy comes in here and is going to be an all-pro.
Yeah, but just think about how much you're giving up to acquire that talent. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think if even in the benefit of hindsight, I don't think the Bengals would have moved up to get Ja'Marr Chase. They just happened to be picking where he was.
Okay, but if I said to you, okay, so you gave up number nine, and then you gave up next year's number one, and if you're a playoff team, that's a pick like number 22. That pick, go look up the numbers. 50% of them don't get to a second contract. So I'm giving you a 50% ticket that guy won't even get to a second contract, and I'm getting potentially an all-pro wide receiver. Are you really giving up that much?
You are when you're... Yeah, because the next year's pick, like, you're taking yourself out of the first round next season when we think this team could be ready to go for a Super Bowl. I want that first round pick next year.
But again, it's more a 50% bust rate.
That's fine. It's not really a 50% bust rate for Ryan Poles.
You know what you are, Shay?
Okay, let
Karnaschovas in there. That's what he is.
Settler. Well, that's a mouthful.
I don't think that's true at all.
You're a settler.
The wide receiver room's good right now. I don't need the mortgage
my future. The wide receiver room is not good.
Are you out of your mind? You have 2,000-yard receivers.
Yeah,
how on earth is it not good?
Hold on there, Sparky. One of them, for four or five straight years, doesn't play a full season. Oh, and he's over 30. Oh, and he's in the final year of his deal.
So the wide receiver room's bad now. Are you saying the Keenan Allen thing was a bad move?
No, I'm not saying that. But you better have a plan how you're going to fix it.
Devontae
Smith just got $75 million for 3 years. What do you think Keenan Allen's going to ask for? $25 million a year.
And I'm not paying him that either, but I'm also not mortgaging my future to move up for a wide receiver.
And then you're down to one solid receiver. One. Good luck.
Oh!
As the price goes up, I got to re-sign this guy. I got to re-sign that guy. Guess what? At some point, the spigot gets turned off. You don't have cap room. If I can get a young receiver that's a potential all-pro, F yeah.
You could do it just sitting at nine. You could get a potential all-pro receiver at nine.
Yeah. It's very black and white with those two.
Oh, yeah. It was funny. You know, It went another direction as well. He called Shay something.
He called him AK.
Yeah, he called him AK, but then he called him something else.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, I mean, listen, that was like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah,
it went on for another 90 seconds
at
least.
When I heard it, the first thought I had was, this is a good conversation about the, you know, because this is something people are talking about. This was last week, whether or not the Bears would be willing to move up to draft Marvin Harrison and what it actually would cost.
And one caution would be...
Call him hot take Shay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it got a little...
Caution would be, though, listen, I love what they've done, the Bears. I think they're set up to be in the best position I can ever remember in my lifetime, to be honest with you, if they pull this off. However, I'm sure Scott Fitterer, when he was trading for Bryce Young last year, was, you know, telling his owner, hey, listen, next year's draft pick's going to be in the 20s because we're going to win this division because it's a very winnable division. All we need is a quarterback. And then now he's out of a job because he traded the number one overall pick. It all looks good on paper if you're drawing it up. But if you have a bad injury, you could be sending a very high pick to the team next year that you're giving up. Yeah. That's the one thing about trading an asset that you're not sure what it is.
They're not trading up, though, for the quarterback. They're trading up for not just a wide receiver. Harrison is... Like Cap's, I hate to side with Cap. Harrison is one of the great college wide receivers we've seen in a long time, and you're pairing him with that quarterback.
Yeah, but what if Caleb Williams has an injury his first year?
Then you're screwed to begin with.
You've given up an asset that you don't know what it is.
It's hard to trade first-round picks as well because, you remember, you have that fifth year of control over them. So if you want to trade a second-round pick, it's more for obvious reasons.
That's the one caveat is, like, if Caleb Williams does get hurt and then you unexpectedly have a 4-13 season, and then that pick then all of a sudden would have been the fifth overall pick, and then you could have built on the injury season.
The only way I even consider this is if you are getting the intel or you whatever it is that all three are going to be gone. Because, again, for me, my preference, I'm not giving up currency if I can get a Dunze. Is Marvin Harrison Jr. a better player? Probably. But I'm confident that a Dunze can be a difference maker as well.
Yeah.
And at that position, when I do have other assets as well, I'm comfortable selecting him at 9 if he's there and saving my draft currency for the following year.
Field Yates said a Dunze would be the number one wide receiver in most years coming out.
Yeah.
He'd be the number one prospect.
And I think Mays was saying this as well. As a pure kind of technical receiver, I think he's better than Neighbors. I think Neighbors has got more explosion and is better with the ball in his hands, as, you know, run after the catch. But from the pure get off the line of scrimmage, create separation, run your route discipline-wise, I personally prefer a Dunze. Now, if Neighbors is there and they take him, I'm not going to scream from the mountaintops. If you gave me the choice of the two, I think I'd still take a Dunze.
All right. If you missed Robert Mays, that will be on our brand new YouTube page, youtube.com/@WaddleandSylvie. Make sure you subscribe. Lots of great conversations there. Again, last week's Mel Kiper conversation, still very timely. So go on there, get all the latest Bears conversation here for the week of the NFL draft. Waddle's World is coming up next.
This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
It's time to find out what's on Tom's mind.
Is that why you are here?
As we go inside Waddle's World.
Let's do it. Some big White Sox news to kick things off.
Do we?
Yeah, Danny Mendick has been called up and is in the lineup tonight. Sox have also optioned right-hander Nick Nastrini to AAA and reinstated reliever John Brebbia from the 15-day injured list among 5 moves made by the team, including Danny Mendick being in the lineup.
They've optioned. We're going to see a lot of Danny Mendick at third base.
Optioned Lenin Sosa to Charlotte and designated infielder Zach Remillard for assignment.
They sent Sosa down?
Why are you doing that? Why are you giving it back to Danny Mendick?
Sosa's been hitting like third or fourth when Aloy was out of the lineup. He was like their 3 hitter. Not that he was any good, but Pedro deemed him the guy who was going to be the 3 hitter. I guess you get no hit for 7 innings for like 2 straight games. Why not?
Yeah, let me bring you some of the. By the way, I think you mentioned this earlier when you added the Bulls getting beat too. The Sox were recently swept by the Phillies.
Yes,
they were outscored 24-7.
Mm-hmm.
They have now been shut out 7 times. They've been shut out. They've been shut out in each of their 7 series, I believe, if I saw that correctly. Has that ever happened? I was kind of frustrated. My eyes were a little glassy. So well,
People are taking notes. Like, I saw USA Today just, again, tweet, like, how they're making even the Oakland A's look good. And, like, how most Major League Baseball teams are going to lap the White Sox. Like, nationally, they're getting some heat. There was a stat I wrote down, like not the specific one. What did I see here? I think Jesse tweeted this one. Zach Wheeler hasn't allowed a hit to the White Sox through 6 innings. Same as Turnbull last night. The Sox are the first team to be held hitless through 6 innings in consecutive games since June of 2022. It's the first time it's happened to the White Sox since August of 1992.
I would have thought that would have gone further back. But they were shut out in the season opening series against Detroit. The Atlanta Braves shut them out in a game. Next, they went to Kansas City, where in the game 3 of that series, they were shut out 3-0. They played Cleveland and got shut out 4-0 in the opening game of that series. They went to Cincinnati, where they were shut out in the middle of 3 games by the Cincinnati Reds. And then they went to Kansas City. They came home for a series with Kansas City, where they opened that series getting shut out 2-0. And then they went to Philadelphia, and in Friday's series opener, they got shut out 7-0. So they've been shut out in each of their first, is that seven series?
Probably.
Four, five, six, seven series.
Jerry embarrassed? Jerry said this would be quick. Jerry said this is why he gave the job to Getz.
It's a good thing Chris Getz is in that position, because imagine if they had gone outside the organization, how bad things would be. The Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals, have 76 runs scored. Their fan base is losing their mind because they have no offense. That's 31 runs more than the White Sox have.
It's crazy. And like I said, in the four games that Jerry Reinsdorf's teams played this weekend, the Heat beat the Bulls 112-91. The Phillies beat the White Sox 7-1. That was 7-0. That was Friday. Saturday, the Phillies beat the White Sox 9-5. Sunday, the Phillies beat the White Sox 8-2. Four games, outscored by 38. Jerry's teams, ladies and gentlemen.
By the way, in other baseball news, the Cubs split a series with the Marlins. And as predicted, and don't get me wrong, nobody's down on Christopher Morel. I think we kind of still see eye to eye on him. He's an exciting young player who has a tendency to ride the roller coaster. And he's currently in one of those valleys. In his last 11 games, he's 3 for his last 40 with 13 strikeouts in that stretch.
I wish the valleys would be less. And look, I got this isn't a Sox and Cubs thing like a lot of people when I pointed out the Jerry thing. Oh, well, how about your Cubs, Sylvie? 2-4 against the Marlins. Like, the Cubs should not be splitting with the Marlins. That loss Saturday in the game one of the doubleheader is inexcusable. And like a longer conversation for Cubs fans that I would like to have is when we talk to Jesse. I haven't thrown this at Jesse yet. Is the Theo Jed era of Cubs baseball? I wouldn't even call it a blind spot. I would maybe even call it a neglect. I think you could argue that, and it's almost been a decade now of since 15 to 24, 2015 to 2024, that they have neglected the closer's role. They have not grown a closer. And when they do get a closer, they don't keep a closer. You know, when they started contending, they had Hector Rondon. He wasn't good enough. So then you had to go out there and trade for Chapman. Chapman then got the job done in 16. They felt it wasn't good enough to re-sign him. So then they went year to year with a veteran closer.
Was Wade Davis?
Wade Davis, at the end, he was working on fumes from Kansas City. That was another trade. I believe they traded Soler. I think it was Soler for Davis.
Ouch.
So you traded Soler for Wade Davis. You never go out and sign a closer for a long-term deal, nor do you ever homegrown a closer. And you go year to year to year with a closer. And you don't spend big money on a closer, but yet you don't. And again, I believe they're back to where they were in 15, where Alzolay was nice, but he's Hector Rondon type nice. He's not when these games are going to be big enough to be good enough to save.
And they should have known that last year.
And so now what do you do? Like, and now you're going to have to give up more prospects to then grab a closer. And I just think you're on a closer carousel here.
I hope that if Craig Counsell tries to bring in Alzolay for a game anytime soon in the ninth inning, that Yan Gomes tackles him before he gets out of the dugout.
But is it Leiter and is it Neris? Are those your two real options? They don't have a great bullpen.
Shame on them.
That's another thing.
I wouldn't give the ball. I was generous with your baseball team's decision-making with regard to Kyle Hendricks. I thought it was probably a good idea to give him the ball against the Marlins, and he immediately went out there in four innings and gave up four earned runs.
I even told you last week that it was I wasn't going to DFA him, but he should not have gotten the ball.
Yes, you did.
And, like, is there anything worse than watching a baseball game right now where Kyle Hendricks hands the ball off to Drew Smiley?
That's usually not a recipe for good stuff.
That's right now as bad as it gets.
Yeah. It's not good. By the way, the Jets have officially now traded quarterback Zach Wilson to the Broncos. I believe that leaves just one quarterback from the 2021 draft with the team that drafted him, and that'd be Trevor Lawrence, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else, the other four, have been sent in different directions. So Zach Wilson is going to go to Denver. I bet that relationship's going to go well with him and Sean Payton.
He's going to
be delightful.
Him.
Also, of more important note, I know you saw this. I don't know if everyone has. Earlier today, Yankees manager Aaron Boone was ejected 5 pitches into their game against the Athletics when the umpire, I think it was Hunter Wendelstadt, right?
Yes.
Decided he'd heard enough coming from the Yankees dugouts. And, oh, by the way, it wasn't Aaron Boone. It was a fan sitting in the first row.
And he still ejected him anyway.
Said, I don't care who it came from. You're out.
How does that happen?
That's got to get fixed. I heard Carmen railing about this. Angry Carm showed up for a little baseball conversation today. You can't continue to do this.
No way.
Like Angel Hernandez, his consistent gaffes, I don't know how they accept that on a week in and week out basis, but you can't have this. This is the definition of the ump show.
If you're going to review a missed call and you say, okay, we screwed that up, he's safe at first. Can't Wendelstadt then say, that came from the stands, my bad. Of course you're not ejected. We're not above this. Why would they still eject him if he didn't say, the cameras clearly show he didn't even open his mouth.
No. And as Aaron Boone argued his case, Wendelstadt said, quote, I don't care who said it, you're gone.
Like,
Boone's responded,
he should be suspended.
What do you mean you don't care? I did not say a word. It was up above our dugout. BS, BS. I didn't say anything. I didn't say an effing thing. You cannot not.
Baseball needs to suspend Hunter Wendelstadt.
Yes.
He should be suspended for that.
I agree. You got to stop this stuff. You really do. You got to stop it. Nobody's paying to watch this crap. By the way, David Beckham is now suing Mark Wahlberg because of a fitness brand deal that went south. I believe it left Beckham about $8 million light in the pocket.
What happened, though? Were they partners
Beckham
in this thing?
Beckham agreed to be the firm's global ambassador when he moved to L.A., where he and Wahlberg became friends. I like Mark Wahlberg, too.
He's got a little weird, though, over the last...
I think that is an accurate depiction. And he's suing the actor's firm, Mark Wahlberg Investment Group, and his gym group, and everyone involved. He claims he lost more than 8.5 million pounds when stocks he was promised were withheld until after share prices plummeted. So, all is not well in the fitness world with two of the bigger sports stars. Well, Wahlberg's not a sports star, but he's one of the bigger. He's been one of the bigger box office stars,
sure,
for quite some time. But that's two power guys there, Beckham and Wahlberg.
Well, Wahlberg was a special teamer with the Eagles.
That's funny. When we come back, I need to get your guys' take on something that's out there about Tay-Tay. And it's not flattering. It's not flattering, and I want to see if you guys concur.
How dare you?
Okay, well, we'll see how you feel when we come back.
Waddle and Sylvie are back. Are back. Follow the show on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
This happens once every few lifetimes. These chemicals hit me like white.
I'm not digging this. This one's not getting me.
What if I told you I'm back? The hospital was a drag. Worst sleep that I ever had. I circled you on a map. I haven't come around in so long.
What's the name of this thing?
This is The Alchemy. This is the Travis. So the Alchemy.
Why is this about Travis?
So when I touch down, call the amateurs and cut them from the team. Ditch the clowns, get the crown, baby.
Clearly, we're not tortured poets, so we don't get it all.
Listen, I'm just reading headlines, okay? So I don't want the Tay-Tay machine to come after me. There are several people that are not excited about this newest project. Taylor Swift had a creative low, was one headline. She is high on her own supply. And here's a review. Worst lyricism to date. Irredeemable. Relentlessly cringeworthy.
These are jealous people.
Just so you know, the Swifties do attack the messenger.
Oh, they
do?
Yeah. I'm just telling you, like, this is what's being said.
By who, though? By who?
These are different critics.
Who?
Let me get your name. This guy is Fantano.
Who's Fantano?
He seems to be a critic. I mean, this is it's an article. High on our own supply. You sound like a Swiftie right now, getting.
I've heard Fantano. What's it with Fantano?
Yeah,
I've heard him referred to as the Sylvie of music critics.
There you go.
What does that mean?
Well, just like we break down sports.
Yeah,
he breaks down.
He
music.
Breaks down music.
He's never worn a jock a day in his life either.
Look at you. There you go.
Bill Tobin.
So I'm just asking the question that usually everything she does is universally loved.
We listen to a lot. My wife and I drove downtown for the big Saluki ball. And so we sat and it was like an hour and 10 minutes driving downtown to the Sheridan.
But like a big dog.
Yes. And we were driving to the Sheridan. It was at the Sheridan, and we listened to the Taylor Swift channel on Sirius.
Your thoughts?
Like, I wish there was more poppy stuff. Like, it is all very like
you
this.
You want more poppy?
I like, the stuff that I've heard, it's all like this. Do you understand what I'm saying? Very mellow.
Uh-huh.
But there's still some... there's some redeeming qualities.
Meller, you said you listened to it this weekend.
Well, I was throwing some in on Friday. I did not carve out, but just in case we wanted to, you know, play some on Friday. And it's just, it all seemed really slow.
Yeah. Maybe that's just a new thing.
That's what she's feeling right now.
Right. Okay, listen, I get it. I mean, the defense mechanisms go up. It's almost like a force field. How is this being universally... Tyler, you live in this world, 27 years of age. How is this being universally received?
I do know... I don't know how as much people, about how it's being received. But people had, like, listening parties where, like, they started at midnight. And they listened all the way through. Like, I saw a couple of posts on Instagram this weekend of people, like... at their listening parties.
Uh-huh. And how were they feeling?
I mean,
they all fell asleep.
she can do whatever, and they'll still love it. Okay. It doesn't matter.
All right.
It's like the Marvel movies.
From Us Weekly, they say some critics didn't love Taylor Swift's TTPD. Is that what it's being called, the Tortured Poets Department?
More concert tickets for us, then, at $1,000 a pop.
Well, there you go. That's what you need, right?
That's what my wife was saying. We got to get to Indy again. Again this weekend, she was telling me that. We got to get to Indy. We got to get to Indy.
How did you like the song about Travis Kelce? Was it? Is this it still?
No. Now we're on So Long London.
Who's taking a kick in the nuts with this one?
London.
I want Florida. Give me Florida again.
It's the closest thing that there was to a poppy song.
Yeah, is that going to be our new Florida or Ohio theme song?
The only thing is, I feel like it's because it's only Florida. Should we play it when Florida is the state?
It's usually the way it is. They're mostly all Florida anyway.
She's the most popular, powerful artist in the world right now.
Of course. They said I was a cheat. Now we're getting somewhere here.
This is what you like?
This is what they played the most of.
Smells like weed. Smells like weed.
Yeah, weed
or babies.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Deep.
We talked about this on Friday, I think.
Okay, did you figure it out from the time we talked about it Friday to now?
You're either being a parent or you're getting your party on.
Well, that's deep. That's really deep. I'm either a parent or I'm getting my party on. All right, Evan.
Here we go. Here we go. Yes, Florida.
Florida.
Yes.
All right. Listen, my guess is she's going to make another billion off of this. God bless her.
Of course she is. All right, is that it? Is that good?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to get some insight into how it's being received.
All right, YouTube and Twitch brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Let's go Sports Bar.
Florida!
And Waddle singing Taylor. Don't forget, we're going to be out at Buffalo Wild Wings on Friday. That's in Woodridge. Waddle will sing all of Taylor's songs on Friday.
That is false advertising.
And we'll be celebrating the Bears. By the way, not only is this a big week for the Bears drafting, it will be another big week for the Bears in another category. They have a big announcement that they will be sharing with the world on Wednesday. We'll tell you what that is. And Aki's A-List coming up next.
So you have your life on wages to wait out the firestorm back in Texas. For it all.